Log Talk Radio.
Thank you. Oh, all right. Throw that tissue.
No. Don't celebrate that. It's not a celebration. Go and see my baby, too.
My mic is hot.
Mojuba araba mi adesanye awuyade mojuba ogute compound ode remo mojuba baba mojuba yeye mojuba egun to all the God children mojuba egun to all the babalawos the ears mojuba egungun to all the chiefs mojuba egungun to all the awos mojuba egungun to all those that are listening who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say ashe 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 ashe
ashe
o
Asheo. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013 and are quickly approaching our fifth anniversary, and we're looking forward to celebrating it with you. So please continue to support us and our sponsors, Manhood Racing Culture, headed up by my co-host on Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones. You can find Dr. Jones on Facebook as James Jones, as well as the like and group page for Manhood Racing Culture, and on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also, please support Arlie Gordon of Unity Design. Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. You can find Brother Arlie on Facebook as Arlie Gordon II and Unity Design, and on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And last but not least, we want to always remember to never forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the families and loved ones and friends that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively, on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. So we want to also remind you to please go to wordpress.com, Redistribute the Pain, to find out how you can get involved in the Redistribute the Pain campaign. We also are initiating a Voice Your Vote campaign where we're not telling people how to vote, who to vote, or if to vote, but if you choose to vote, we need to be strategic about how we use the system in our favor. So reach out to us at 513-913-2691. You also can find me on Twitter at Queen Tahira, Queen_Tahira on Instagram, and, of course, Queen Tahira, Sign of the Times, and New Power Radio Network on Facebook. So also, if you have a family or loved one who is behind enemy lines and maybe you've lost track of them, we also can help you find them if they've gotten lost in the system somewhere. So, again, reach out to us so we can reach back out to you and each one teach one, and we're going to continue to build and support one another as we always done for almost 5 years now. So tonight we have the honor of having the Detroit Exoneration Program joining us, Brother Ramzu Yunus, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Brother. Welcome to Sign of the Times. How are you doing this evening?
Welcome. Greetings to you and all your guests. Thanks for having me here. I'm fantastic.
Great. Now, when I read about the Detroit Exoneration Program, let me read the clip that I found on social media, which caused me to reach out to you. It says, the Detroit Exoneration Program was established by human rights policy officers to counter the afflictions from a legal system that is not impartial and which victimizes those already suffering from human rights abuses, which help lead to criminal activities in the first place. The legal system claims to represent the people. Hence, when one goes to court, you will hear or read the people of blank versus so-and-so. We must become aware that as the people, we have the power and the right to also drop whatever charges are given in our name. Due to the unfair socioeconomic conditions that have caused most criminal activity along with a racially biased legal system, ain't that the truth, brother? It has been decided to exonerate all individuals convicted and facing conviction for nonviolent crimes. This exoneration can only happen by the consent of the people. Therefore, a referendum vote or withdrawal of consent has been scheduled to take place July 4th, 2018 at the Detroit City Hall, wherein the people will consent to an interim authority with the new policy to clear those charged by the current system. The fact that political power is inherent to the people will be exercised that day. And then it gives a link to a website that lists www.humanrightspolicy.info/crimes-expunged. But if you go to any of the Sign of the Times or New Power Radio Network pages on social media, you can find the links there as well as any post for tonight's broadcast. So, Brother, what do you prefer to be called, Brother Yunus or Brother Ramzu?
Brother Ramzu.
Okay, Ashe. Brother Ramzu, again, welcome to the air. Please introduce yourself and tell us about this, empowering, to say the least, program that you all are initiating in Detroit.
Okay, well, myself, I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody, and that somebody is them, their own power. But I hailed out of North Carolina, even though I'm in Detroit right now. I call it Ground Zero. But I had moved to Zimbabwe, so I spent most of my adult life in Zimbabwe. But I recently returned to America and picked Detroit as the place to launch certain things that was in my heart, in my spirit. Here comes the Detroit exoneration program, along with other things. On July the 4th, we're having what we call Black Independence Day, which since you all know human rights, and you know we do have a right to self-determination, a right that was never offered to Black people. They just so-called let us out of slavery and said, okay, now you're part of the system, our system. You know, they didn't say, okay, we're going to free you, and now you have a choice. Do you want to have your own nation, go for yourself, since we stole you from your nation, and you are disconnected from them? Here's some land. Start on your own. They didn't offer us that. They co-opted us into this system, a system that is already biased against us, and racist and biased against us, and a system that already had its own resources that we helped to establish, and we started with nothing. So it's no equality there. But being a people, we have a right to self-determination, especially people that have been oppressed. We are a special group here. We have a right to govern ourselves. But, of course, that act has never been invoked. The only time that right was invoked, that natural God-given right of self-determination and governing self was invoked, was by the so-called founding fathers. They felt they were not being treated fairly. They were the ones inhabiting this territory called America, and they were being governed by absentee, so-called landlord, absentee government all the way in Britain. They said, okay, you all in Britain trying to govern us over here. We have a right to determine ourselves, govern ourselves. So they made that decision. So why don't we make that decision as a people? You know, now we can make that decision since we already are a majority in certain cities. Why don't we just say, look, we are the majority here. We don't want your government. You know, that's a human right that we have, but not just a human right. Every state constitution I've looked at, that's part of like the number one article is that people have a right, that political power is inherent in the people to have a right to govern themselves. Or they have and if they don't agree with the government, they can alter or abolish the government and institute one that's for their own safety and happiness. So knowing that right, we decided, so let's implement that here in Detroit. So I just came, you know, so I appeared myself here in Detroit only a few years ago and started pushing that Black Independence Day, which gained some traction in 2016. We made national news. It was a big thing, went on. A lot of people there to vote for independence, and it was unlawfully suppressed by the authorities. You know, naturally they felt threatened and put the police on us, and I was arrested, so forth, and others. And you know, I went back to Zimbabwe to regroup for a year now. I'm back here doing it again with Black Independence Day, July the 4th. And one of the benefits of independence is, look, now we control this. So now all the unlawful, unfair things that they have been doing, we can reverse that. One of them being incarcerating, falsely incarcerating our people. First of all, they were incarcerated under duress. These crimes were created under duress. We were put in poverty, so naturally people impoverished are going to do crimes, you know. And poverty itself is a human rights violation. Who put us in poverty, you know? So we're going to do crimes to survive inside this system. We're going to sell some drugs. We're going to steal something, you know. We can't afford insurance and things like that. You know, drive cars without paying that high insurance, especially if everyone knows Detroit. Insurance is very high here. You pay like $500 a month for insurance. You know, so people are going to be caught driving without, you know. So, but you want, and other things that would happen that we do in this unfair system. Like Dr. King said, you don't blame the people what they do, blame them for what they do in the dark. Blame whoever cut the lights off. So knowing that, we said, no, we have the right as the people to exonerate, to take control, to first take independent political control, and then we exonerate, we expunge, we clear the charges from our people that have been falsely charged or charged in general with these crimes under duress. And, of course, look at the cases of those who have been falsely accused that linger in prison. Some have died in prison. But so that's the exoneration program. And but that's me myself. I'm just nobody. I don't have much to say about myself. I just came over here from back from Africa after 9 years living there in Africa. I worked with Mugabe himself and worked his office and through his office, met other leaders around the world, and of course that developed my view of looking at the struggle in a human rights way, a way of self-determination, because I had many arguments with government officials over there. They looked at our struggle over here as one of us wasting a lot of time and using rhetoric. You know, nobody standing for self-determination. They let me know that the only thing to be in a revolution about is self-determination. Like Malcolm X said, land, territory, control. Why would you waste your resources, rah-rah, having million-man marches and so forth? For what are you doing that for? You know, I would justify those marches and stuff and argue against them. But sooner or later, I came to the realization, okay, y'all are making a point there. So when I returned, I said, no, I'll push for self-determination. We'll take action, legit, concrete action for self-determination. So anyway, here we are. I'm not going to ramble on.
No, I appreciate and respect, you know, what you've contributed so far, brother, because we've been having this discussion on Sign of the Times for, I know, at least 3 years. And it's one thing to know about human rights, unalienable rights, natural law, but it's another thing to, I guess, galvanize the energy and the right types of people that will help push forward those things that we know are inherently ours because we walk the face of this earth. So, I mean, it's like a breath of fresh air to hear that, you know, that you not only experienced it, but you've done the study. You know from outside the views that we talked about again here, like people are just wondering, like, what in the world is going on in America that we keep tolerating being so badly mistreated? Mm-hmm. Not only now, but for generations and decades, we tolerated it. So, you know, I want to get into this thing. I want to know, you know, I'm in Cincinnati, and right now we've got an issue, and not to digress off of the Exoneration Project too much, but I need your help. We've got property owners here who have been victimized by gentrification, and the state, the city, the county, the court, have all been in collusion with each other to forcibly separate people from their property. So we've started to organize. And now that we've got this good, healthy group, and I've done the best that I could, you know, to empower them with what I know, we need some outside support. So you just don't know how good this is to hear that you're actually, you know, further along in the process with, you know, what you know and what you've experienced, not only here, but, you know, elsewhere, but are ready to actually put some power behind it. Because I'm telling you, we need it bad. We need it bad. So, yeah, please continue. How are you foreseeing us being able to not only implement this other places, but to support this event on July the 4th?
Just by spreading awareness. You know, people in Detroit can spread, and some people are coming from out of state, you know. They came last time, you know, from out of state. Because it's for the people in general, but we have to start it somewhere. And I salute what you all are doing in Cincinnati. Cincinnati definitely needs it. Well, all the black cities need it, but Cincinnati is a special place that I've been watching as well. But, yeah, you just by just, you know, spread word of it. If you have friends in Detroit, spread it on social media. Say, look, Detroit, you can also come in and join us. There's enough space here in Detroit for everybody to come. You know, Detroit used to be about around 3 million people, and now it has a few hundred thousand, so several hundred thousand. So it's empty properties, empty infrastructure, the perfect place. That's why I chose it. I don't like Detroit. I never had never thought of living in Detroit, you know, but when I came back to America, I thought I'm coming back to do something. And this, and where would I go? So I had to fast and pray on that. And some angels in the form of people said, you ever been to Detroit? Just out of the blue, they didn't even know what I was thinking or what I was coming back to America for. They said, have you been to Detroit? This is that. So I kept hearing that. And then I decided Detroit is perfect. I came and visited and said, look, this place is empty. Got a whole infrastructure. It's empty. Largest freshwater source on the earth. So perfect for our people. So anybody can join. People are welcome to come, but to help out, this particular city, you can spread the word, let people know. And of course, you can then implement this everywhere else, because the biggest part of our program, you know, like I said, overall, it's called Black Independence Day. And like you said about the housing, that's our biggest response, is the housing part of Black Independence Day. Detroit, we call it the Detroit Free Housing Program. That's what we're getting a lot of response from, because Detroit has hundreds of thousands of properties. The properties belong to the people. They don't belong to the mayor. They don't belong to the city council or any other authority. They belong to the people. Everything in the city is done in the name of the people. It's like everything is done in the country in general, done in the name of the people. So the people at any given time can stand up and say no, not by marching and protesting like that. You can, that's good, you can do that too, but by lawfully saying, look, we withdraw our consent. Now what you going to do? You don't have our consent, you can't govern over us. You can only govern over somebody who willfully consents to that. So if I don't consent to you, you're not my mayor. I don't look at you as a mayor. You know, you're just in that building now calling that you. I don't recognize your police. Matter of fact, we have our own police force here. You know, the, you know, this, that. And you put that in place and you act it out like an ambassador of the United Nations told me. He said, okay, I see what you're doing. That's great. This is it. So now, after you do this type of thing, now you just begin to act. They don't exist no more. They only exist because you made them exist. You know, so you act, you get the people on your side, you rally the people, and the people say, look, we consent to this. So what we're doing is rallying the people to consent, sign over their consent to our interim council that will put new policies into place immediately. Then we'll have election in 2-3 months or whatever, and the people will elect their own constitutional government. The people have a power to do that. That's in the Constitution. So if the Constitution itself says that, how can I, as a black man in a population of, that majority looks like me, keep complaining, say, oh, y'all police shot us down, this, y'all doing us wrong. When all they have to do is say, look, nigger, we get put in the Constitution that you can change it if you want to. So if you don't agree with the government, abolish, alter it, or abolish it. You never took that option. That's you who want to march and beg us for mercy. You know, so we're marching, begging them for mercy where they don't have power to grant to be merciful. We have that power. We are being merciful by allowing them to do this. So let's stand up and say, look, no more. Our mercy has preceded our wrath. Now it's time for our wrath. And our wrath, you best be thankful our wrath is not to kill you all, but our wrath is to stand up and take power for you and let you, and you're fired. You know, so we have that power, so it's time for us to stand up and do that. So in each city should be rallied upon the same thing, you know. But, of course, like you said, it's hard to galvanize people behind this, which is very hard to galvanize us conscious people anyway. We know too much, you know what I mean, to be galvanized. It's stubborn. You know, knowledge makes you stubborn. If Marcus Garvey was here today, not one of us would join Marcus Garvey. You see, Marcus Garvey was able to build a movement of millions because they, all of them back then didn't even, they was pig feet eaters, didn't even know their history. So that's why they were easier to galvanize. They didn't know so much, you know. But now with knowledge comes stubbornness, arrogance. We know everything, and we're harder to put us apart and put us together. So, and I learned that my first year here. Don't reach out to those type people. Reach out to the poor and afflicted, you know. Me, myself, not to get too religious, you know, I'm not a Christian, but I like reading and learning wisdom from the scriptures. So I read the Bible when Jesus said the kingdom of God is like a, in the kingdom of God in Jesus' term, wouldn't know in the sky, Jerusalem, rulership over Jerusalem. He said it's like a man who had a banquet for his son, and he sent the people to it, his servants out to invite those who he thought should be come to the banquet, of his class, his, to come to the banquet. None of them came. So the servants came back and said, they're not coming. They're doing their own thing. He got angry. So I'll tell you what, forget them. Go out and get the poor and afflicted. And all of them showed up, you see. So we must appeal to the poor and afflict those who are suffering and say, look, this is the benefits from having nationhood, from standing up. You know, what we're doing here in Detroit, like Detroit Free Housing Program, the exoneration program, so take 70% probably of our population, especially black men or even more, have criminal charges against them. You know what I mean? 80% of us are functionally homeless. You know, so look, we appeal on that aspect. So look, if you stand up, I tell you, you're not going to stand up because they shot a little boy or they shot a little girl police. You might stand up for 2 days for that. But I'm telling you what, stand up so you can have a better life, a better living, so you won't be homeless. Stand up for that. And they stand up now. They responded. You know, so look, stand up so you can have one of these hundreds of thousands of empty properties that are going to waste in Detroit. You know, so when you sway them with, because everybody's on lower self-thinking, you know, survival thinking, justice and all those principles of nationhood, those are high level thinking of we got to appeal to that lower level of survival. Then they will respond. And so that's the avenue we're using, the method we use. We keep telling people to come so you can have a better life, and they're standing up. And of course, it's threatening to the powers that be, but that's our way of doing it. And I would like to come help you all and rally with you all to do it in every city. But we must do this in every city. It will be done in every city. But of course, just making an example here in Detroit. We look to make an example here in Detroit, and then it was spread elsewhere.
Ashe,
Can you tell me, you know, by you being divinely led to Detroit, we talked about the water crisis that's happening there in Detroit, and we know that there is no normal level of lead in the human body, and that when a child is lead poisoned, and they often experience not only learning difficulties, but they often end up in the judicial system as adults. So can you talk about how you're incorporating the water crisis into even looking at maybe some of these cases, whereas these children may have grown into adults to commit crime?
That's a good aspect. I haven't looked at that. We haven't even discussed that, you know, but that would be taken in. But I know I'm aware of that reality and stuff. But we haven't looked at it under that aspect, but we just know that the fact that we are crazy in general without the lead, we've been made crazy. We've been conditioned into being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, poverty and ignorance, that's a recipe for self-destruction, you know, and self-destructive activities, criminal activities, you know. So when we are under both, we're under poverty and we're ignorant. We've been purposely miseducated. So yeah, but layer situations, see, that's another factor. That leads to certain kind of actions and criminal behavior. So all that plays in. So we'll weigh that in. But in general, the people was, you know, are for this anyway, regardless. You know, we don't have to appeal to white judges or their systems that look this, and that. The people will already readily agree to what you just said. And we're letting them out. You know, they're free. We control this city. It's our jurisdiction. We can, just like a new president can come in and pardon anybody in the United States if he wants to. He can come and pardon a local drug dealer, you know, a local rapist, a local murderer. He can do that, you know, so we have authority over this. So same thing with the mayor and officials of a city. They can do the same thing. So we will be looking at that and say, look, you're free. That's what we have the power to do. We just have to exercise our power. Otherwise, we have no excuse. You know, we run around saying black power, power to the people. Now let's prove power to the people. If we really chant this, I've been in marches and stuff. We chanted that and stuff, but let's exercise that. We believe power to the people.
Ashe. Well, so on July the 4th, if people are able to make it to Detroit, what can we expect?
No, there'll just be a referendum going on. We'll have like an hour and a half of, you know, a couple of I don't believe in the speech type thing. We just speak to the people, let them know what's going on, what's happening, why self-determination, why self-government, how this is the only route we can receive justice. And I've invited some international people, even from the African Union. They've yet to answer and say this, so they get back with me, let me know. But I've invited them to say a few words. Some government officials, also African government officials, so I've invited them, you know, people like that come out. But basically, it's just and we're going to have a fair at the end, you know, celebrate, and also a fair to be, start allocating the homes out to people and so forth, other processes. And of course, after that, we're going to have a big convention to start these processes going full fledged and bringing necessary or qualified people aboard. So on July the 4th, we'll just see a big mass gathering, rally. Vote. Main thing is to vote, the referendum. You vote, you know. But along with that, of course, we have a little rally and people knowing, getting to know each other, and so for socializing and just moving this thing forward. So there'll be a lot of people there. Like even the first time we did it without this much advertised, that much stuff. It was a big response. It was just 40-something days of walk around, passing outside, talking to people. It was a big response. Thousands showed up. That's why they got threatened, the mayor and them of not Detroit. We was in the middle of Detroit in Highland Park. They felt threatened and shut it down, even though they asked us, they called us to the side and told us to shut it down and meet them in their office and come up with a compromise, which we refused to do. So they arrested us. And after we got out of jail, they called us and we met with them a number of times. They tried to compromise, give us houses and things, offer us houses and stuff like that. So they know that the power is to the people, and eventually we are going to win. So we took a year break, and now we're back, and we will win.
Ashe. Well, I definitely plan on being there July the 4th. When you speak of exoneration and the referendum that's being pushed forward, the referendum, it's actually going to be on the ballot, and is it going to be in the ballot in November?
No, not on that ballot. It's really a referendum, really a declaratory type statement or petition. Where you sign your
mm-hmm.
signature, say, I don't consent. I consent to this. I withdraw my consent from that. Something that you file with the federal government, local government, whatever, but you let the international, let American states know that the African Union guys will receive it, the United Nations will receive it. Look, this is what we have to declare. We'll govern ourselves. This is the law. This is international law. But it's also a local
mm-hmm.
law. So this is how we're going to act. So, no, we're not calling for things to be on the ballot. We just a declaratory thing. We take effect. If you're going for nationhood instead of determination, it's not. It won't be recognized by them. They weren't going to honor it in the first place. They shut it down. They showed their hand by shutting it down illegally the first time. You know,
mm-hmm.
And trying to throw false charges at us and things like that. But no, we're not putting it on the ballot.
Ashe. Now, when you know, I've been a part of another. Conscious movement, and they often held what they called people's tribunals. People's tribunals also something that you all are looking at enacting to where, say, for instance,
oh, yeah.
here when Sam DuBose was killed and
mm-hmm.
the person was exonerated and then paid almost $450,000 for back pay, you know, are people tribunals something that you all have talked about too?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely. that's one of the number one things we want to have is people tribunal dealing with those issues of charging people and also the issue of reparations, you know,
mm-hmm.
which they already admitted their guilt. You know, that's one thing, even though I've been guilty of bashing Obama and stuff, that he didn't do nothing, you know, besides follow their will with you. But one thing beneficial happened during his first year of presidency, the House Resolution 194, where they lawfully and the congressmen and senators signed off on, apologized, and admitted that slavery was wrong. It was a criminal act, you know. So now it's up to the people to have a tribunal and say, look, you already admitted your guilt, so we lawfully as a people find you guilty, and this is what we're going to charge you with and say you owe, you know, and payment we're going to put on you, payment owe. You reparations payment, you owe, and you know, seize property from here and there if we have to. That's how they do. You know, it's how they do worldwide. They seize property when they find out somebody. Oh, if you owe the Jews, they're gonna seize German bank accounts and seize this. If some people owe the Bosnians or owe somebody somewhere else, and the money running through in their territory, if they doing violations in Zimbabwe and some of the Zimbabwean government own property in the United States, they seizing their property and everything, money in the banks, property. Here in the States and everything. So we also have a right to do that as well. And we are the people. We are the court. The court is not the judge and the prosecutor. The court is the people. That's why I always say it's the people versus. You know, so now we're doing the people's tribunal. And you all knowing human rights, you know that impartial or partial tribunals, that's a human rights violation. Those don't represent the people. So we're going to have a real impartial tribunal of the people, you know, who they're supposed
mm-hmm.
to represent. And let the people speak.
So how do we start to organize on a local level? Say if this is someone's first time hearing something like this and, you know, it strikes their interest, where do you suggest that they begin?
Well, first you begin with self, you know, saying, look, I agree with this. I want to organize it. Then hopefully you can convince others to get together and y'all form a committee to have organized this, you know, a lawful legal committee or council, whatever you want to call it, to organize it and to enforce this. You know, but of course, it starts with the individual. The individual builds the group, and that group spreads out, spreads the word, and bring in the people to consent to what they're doing. You know, so it starts with the individual, because if nobody agrees with the individual do it by him or herself. But because it's something for the people, so the people will agree to it. I don't know if you can get some people brave enough or even have the will to even do it. I'm not going to scare somebody, people by saying brave enough, but people might not have the will to organize and to get out and make this happen. So maybe only one person might have the will to do it. That one person has to do it, you know. Of course, it's a lot of work and maybe too much work for one, but I never say too much, but you might have to bat across to everybody else. But but yes, you begin like that. Who's willing to do this? Okay, you get the group and y'all discuss these are the rights that we have. Now we're going to organize and get the people these rights. Now you have to, all you have to do, like I like to reference Jesus' movement, because it was more revolutionary than we think. You know, he started with himself. He had the will to do it and bring political independence to Jerusalem. But he had to go and get some disciples to help him in that mission. Then he had to make the disciples fishers of men to get the populace behind what they were doing. And then that's the power right there. He wasn't fishing for men for a church. He didn't have a church. He wasn't, you know, he was fishing for men because he needed a populace to take over the Rome, because Roman was a democracy. They even needed consent of the people to kill Jesus. But Jesus said, no, y'all, forget Caesar. Render yourself to the kingdom, to God. Jesus was what Caesar. God is what God. You belong to God, and I represent God. So submit your consent to our new government, to the kingdom, you know, which will be a new Jerusalem, Jerusalem free from the Roman authority. So he started with himself willing, then he convinced 12 others to look, the kingdom is at hand, political independence, your benefit is at hand, a new life for you is at hand. Go and fish the people, give them the good news of this, give the people the good news, and they will come, you know. And so that's what we do as a people. We form a group, whether it be 1 to 12 or 20, 30, whatever, then we go out and we become fishers of men to get the populace behind this thing, you know. In short terms, of course, there's a lot of some few little intricate things you do for us, forming the policies and all that kind of stuff together. But that's in a nutshell. Get yourself together, get a few people that's willing, develop your game plan, and go out and do it. Campaign and bring the people together under this government to consent to something new.
Ashe. When we have our next, how soon do you think you could take a trip and come to Cincinnati? Because our property group is meeting like twice a month, and we just recruited 8 more people last week. So we've got a good core group of about 12 who are either current property owners or who have been forcibly separated. But we're ready, like. And the city's ready, because they're really upset with our mayor right now, Mayor Cranley, who was in charge when the 2001 uprising took place here. And his motto back then was, let the poor hit the door. And he's making no qualms about that's the way, that's still the way he feels about community now. He said, show the poor the door. Those were his exact words. Yeah, and so right now, even in the community called the West End, we're fighting to save the last high school in the urban community. The rest of them have basically become high schools of choice, and they want to take the high school stadium in order to put a soccer stadium there for a team that's only been in existence for 3 years. But it's just another example of the petty bourgeoisie coming into the urban community, and because we're looked upon as one, being unorganized, and two, not exercising our right to vote and not believing that we're taxpayers. You know, when I have the conversation with our people about, even, you know, when Renee goes to the store and buys a juice and a bag of chips, she's a taxpayer. And when you say that to people, it's like, damn, you know, I never really thought of myself in the capacity of a taxpayer. We have this image that a taxpayer is as somebody that owns property, or somebody that owns a business, or somebody that drives a fancy car or whatever. We don't consider ourselves taxpayers, and, you know, empowering them with, you know, that little bit of information, it makes a big difference. So I know that if we had some outside support, you know, and be able to show the example of other people being willing to do this, I think it would give our people a lot more courage. So yeah, the sooner we can get you to Detroit to talk to our people, I mean to Cincinnati to talk to our people, the better.
Oh, I'm game. I'm your servant. So in any capacity, I'm here to serve you all, serve the people. Yeah, whatever's clever. You know, I'm down. That's what I'm here for. If we're here to serve and make this stuff happen, believe me, I'll be back in Africa sitting under a palm tree. But I'm here, so we have to make this thing happen. So I'm willing.
So So tell me about your experience in Zimbabwe. How was that comparatively speaking to the U.S. and what did you learn there that you know that because you were born here that you would not have been empowered with had you not made that journey?
Well, I learned, you know, self-reliance, you know, where you have to rely on self. I mean, I never seen black people, like, manufacturing everything for themselves and stuff, you know, like, wow, like, you could actually we can go beyond putting our name on a pair of shoes and a pair of jeans that's really made in China, you know, like, these guys are manufacturing shoes, manufacturing things themselves. And then, most of all, what hit me, what got me on this mission here, inspired me, they're governing themselves. I was sitting in the office, like, with the president, or sitting in the office with his number of the ministers, like, these guys are sitting here governing themselves, like, and I know for a fact, not to put them guys down, but I know for a fact we're a lot more clever, you know. See, let me take that statement back, but you know, that's my heart. We are clever, you know. We have been given a certain knowledge that they haven't been given, because some of them, they still worship white people, you know. They've been colonized. Got a colonized mind. They were not blessed with leaders like Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Noble Drew Ali, Malcolm X. People that conscientized them. They were blessed. Now, they was blessed with revolutionaries, of course, which got them their freedom. But if you get free and don't have the consciousness, you can fall back into error, you know, because you'll start trusting in that those white people who are your Jesus and so forth, and they'll put you right back in under colonization in an economic way and stuff. But I saw these people, they was governing and stuff, and I was working with in their office. We was putting together policies and different programs together. Like, wow. So it inspired me, like, man, we can govern ourselves in America. So the biggest thing I got over there was basically just self-government. These are people governing themselves, people that, you know, like, wow, who was governing themselves, controlling an economy, manufacturing things, you know, they had their own airports, you know, like, they're governing themselves. So that was the biggest inspiration that I got out of there, and that I know that we can do ourselves. And these are the same, like us, they were governed by other people. Even though they were the majority population, they were governed by others. And they never thought that they could, you know, do something for themselves. But men decided, and women decided, look, man, we can govern ourselves. They don't have a right to be governing over us and stuff, you know. And they start, all those people over there, not just in Zimbabwe, all over Africa, start fighting for freedom. And Zimbabwe was one of the last countries to get free and independent, you know, so that inspired me and seeing them govern themselves. But the first thing when I first touched down was how they were just self-reliant, you know, selling their own stuff, food from the farms and things out there, selling bananas, so just selling stuff. And I saw people manufacturing things, like a friend of mine, he bought a plastic factory making plastic stuff like bottle caps, plastic forks, plastic discs and stuff like that. Stuff that black people here don't do. We have billions of dollars, but we're not going to be manufacturing stuff like that. Those are key things we need. We need spoons. We need plastic bottles, cups, and forks, and ice trays, and stuff like that. Just manufacturing things like that. You know, these people they were doing it. You know, and that was inspiring to see people governing themselves and manufacturing, being self-reliant like that. So that's the biggest thing I got out of there. Of course, it's home to us, so immediately you're going to be relieved of stress as soon as you land there. You're going to feel a spirit of this home. The temperature is good. The people look like you, and they're peaceful, and, you know, it benefit us over here. And that's why I always say to this day, that's why I had to go through that experience over in Zimbabwe, so I can come back with that. Because experiences that shape people and drive people to their destiny. And that experience helped drive me to come back over there and say, look, we govern ourselves as well over here. We do have that right. And I've seen it done by people who, you know, got the same brains we got and look the same skin we got. So let's do it. You know, so that's the inspiration. Are we still connected or did I go off?
I'm sorry, brother, I was muted. Thank you for that. Can you go into detail? You mentioned the colonized mind. Some people don't realize what a colonized mind is because you often don't realize you have one until someone gives you something different. So can you talk about what exactly you mean by a colonized mind?
I mean, well, like when the people take over your country and over your culture and stuff, and first they give you their education. And that's the beginning of a colonized mind. You have their religion and their education. But if you didn't even if you had their religion, if you had a proper education, you can turn that religion into something beneficial for yourself. Like Nat Turner, he's the biggest revolutionary I know in America, but he was a Christian preacher. So you can't blame it on the religion. It's the education what drives that person to make certain moves to utilize tools like religion. So, you know, they got over there and colonized them, gave them education, made them think that white was right and you should do things this way and that way. And, you know, just so now they start thinking like, hey, the way the white people do it is right. And, they, you know, they slowly disregarded their own culture, you know, and started changing their names. And so they're looking for an English name. You know, a friend of mine I was in business with, he got mad at me because I called his son by the name his wife gave him, which his wife gave him an African name. He gave him some old American cool ghetto name, Tehran or some whatever name he gave him. And so I called him this Fufu, whatever his wife gave him. And so he got mad. You know, it's a colonized mind. They think that you should have the white man's name. That's probably, you know, that's something that you got an English name. You know, so that's a colonized mind. You know, you're thinking like your colonizer is superior. Now your mind has been replaced by his thinking. I don't want no African name. You know, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would say, you don't find Chinese people with names like Jeffrey and stuff like that. You only find black people with those kind of names. They look like African, but they got white people names. So I would tell the Zimbabwe, I said, look, man, why you name your son daughter that? I said, Tony Blair, who was the enemy of Zimbabwe, the English prime minister, said Tony Blair would never name his son Shaka Zulu. So why are you naming your son Tony? You know, and they would actually get it. You know, a lot of them, they're very, very educated and open-minded people over there. They just have been colonized. They haven't heard this reasoning because their educational system has been taken over. You know, everything, the culture has been, you know, almost taken over. Of course, they still got a lot of that. But so they just, their mind is colonized. It's owned by their slave masters or their colonizers, so they think that same way to this day. You know, so it was hard. That's why it was hard for Mugabe to get them to cooperate with him because they still was thinking, look, I'm giving you your land back. You know what I mean? Do something with your land. You don't need the white people to help you grow stuff. You was the one doing the work anyway. You know, think we need the white man. He's the master. He's the master of commerce. You know, so they would, some of them succumb to that. But anyway, that's what I mean by colonized mind. You think like him. He gave you educational system. His name is better. His methods are better. Even though we don't look and see that his methods have failed every economy on earth, you know, but we still think like that's colonized mind. He's going to educate you to think his educational system, his economic system is better. His mode of dressing is better. And so if you grow up in with the education, you can't help but think that until somebody comes with an alternative.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And as we proceed in unifying under this new platform and unifying in a way that's going to allow us to govern ourselves, one of the things that has come into question when we talked about status correction here on the air is how can we operate within a government? How can we have our own society within the government? And we talked about, well, the Amish, you know, have been able to do it. You know, there have been certain groups of people that have been able to do it. Is what you're envisioning similar to what they have, or is it something that's going to be different than what we see out there in those groups of people?
The Amish are not really autonomous. You know, they just keep to themselves and do their own thing so the government don't mess with them. You know what I mean? So what we want to do is, it'd be similar because we want to be self-sufficient like them, of course, but we want to be more like the Indian reservations but more self-governing. When you declare your independence and take control of your political situation, then you can define your relationship. You know, what they call I can't even think of it because right now, but I say it every day when we're in discussion. You have like a freestanding relationship association, free association with America under your own terms. Like, look, like they can be like the Indians, this, that. Or you can say, no, we don't want your federal help. We don't want this. We're governing ourselves. But since we do share the same territory, if we have to, we'll fight together sometimes. You know what I mean? If they're going to train each other, but we respect. You respect our airspace. We respect your airspace. We're still using your dollars. We'll let dollars come through this system and so forth and so on. But other than that, we're going to govern ourselves. So we define the terms of the rules of engagement. You know, we're going to engage mm-hmm. with you in this way. But we want to be autonomous. You can't make any federal you have no federal jurisdiction over us and cannot pass down any kind of executive orders or laws upon us, you know. We would define that relationship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but similar, okay. I like the Amish, you know, stuff similar to that. But go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, it's just that, you know, I'm just glad to be that you all are thinking this way. But I know there are. I know I'm not the only one thinking like that. I always tell my brother, we're not, believe me, even though we want to think we are special people, we're not so special that there are not others out there thinking this way. But
mm-hmm.
we just got to come together. And, of course, if we put the right vibration out there, we will attract to each other one way or the other. We're going to connect, whether it be a Facebook post we see or something, we're going to connect if we keep that vibration
out there. That's
right. So I'm glad that we connect. And some elder told me that before. He said, never get discouraged, young man. Just keep doing what you're doing, and whatever is needed will come.
mm-hmm.
And to always take that into play. Every night I said, look, what's needed will come. I don't have to cry and say, oh, we ain't got no help. I just tell the brother that today, we ain't got no soldiers. We need more soldiers. We need this. I said, bro, just put in the work, and what's needed will come. What's needed will come. So we're putting in the work, and then we connect with other like-minded people like you all who are doing great things. The things you told me you're doing, that's great. That's why I'm definitely going to come to Cincinnati. You all are organized. You all are in motion. And motion creates attraction and make things happen. So
mm-hmm.
You've attracted me. I'm coming, you know. So
Ashay.
That's a given. That's a given.
Yeah, brother. Another thing that we've talked about here on the air is our culture. You mentioned putting the right vibrational frequencies out and, you know, manifesting our new destiny, if you will. You know, where are we, culturally speaking, in your opinion? Is there a way to recapture that and use that as a galvanizing tool as well? Or have we become so colonized or Americanized that we've lost our culture in the mix?
We don't have a culture, you know. Our culture is defined by the media. We can wear skinny jeans 1 year, baggy jeans 1 year, bell bottoms 1 year. We can accept certain sexual relationships 1 year. Next year we don't. You know, it's defined by the media because it's up to a nation. A nation is a womb, even in ancient languages. The word nation is umam, which is the mother, same word as mother. It has a womb. That nation that's in control, which the Americans in control, and they control the media, control everything, they shape the culture. They define the culture. This culture is this culture is that. Being that we don't have a nation, we don't have a culture. We're subject to whatever culture that they put us up under. But they have the power of distributing, of advertising, of media, making us like this kind of clothes, making us like this and do this, you know. So until we have a nation, no, we don't have a culture. You know, we can like certain things here and there. Certain individuals of us, groups of us, can develop a subculture. But overall, as a people, we have no culture whatsoever. Culture comes with nationhood. So until we get nationhood, we just subject to the more powerful formers of the they form the culture for us. And though we can develop subcultures, like we all got conscious community people, you know, call each other queens and kings. We can wear some African dashikis and stuff and form a little small subculture. But ultimately, we don't have a culture as people. That's something that has to come with nationhood. When we get nationhood, then we define certain limits. We don't go this route. We control distribution. We control media and stuff like that. And the people don't want to see this, you know. So you'll get more mental control or direct control over what forms in the minds of people. But that's, like I said, with our nationhood.
Ashe, thank you for that. And what do you all have you talked about accountability in the community? Because that's something else that we talked about too. You know, we've got a lot of spokesperson type group that for generations again have so-called represented our best interests, but yet our best interest fails to be represented. Have you all talked about any accountability with those groups, or is it you all's vision that those groups will go to the wayside as this movement picks up momentum?
Yeah, man, nature pushes things to the wayside that are not useful. Definitely if things are destructive in some ways, nature has a tendency And progress is part of nature. Progression toward perfection. And perfection always pushes things to the side that are useless and definitely if it's harmful. So, no, accountability to these other groups, their accountability is in the state of what they're in now. You know, a lot of groups are perishing, you know, not doing anything from inactivity because they're not responding to the need. You know, some hanging on by threads, you know, just trying to raise money to stay afloat and things like that. But, for if that's what you mean by accountability to these groups, no, they'll fall by the wayside or they'll come on and join what's right. You know, this is power to the people, not to personalities and leaders of groups. This is power to the people, which all these groups have been saying themselves. So let's put it in action, give power to the people, not personality cults and personalities in the movement and stuff. You know, we're servants. That's why people say, what should I call you? Can't you come to my church and say something? What should we call you? Are you reverend this, minister this? No, I'm servant Ramzu. I'm here to serve the people. So we should always be in that capacity. And so if we're not servants of the people, then we're going to abuse and should be held accountable for the abuse. But a servant will never be accountable because a servant is at the will of the people. So we have to put ourselves in that capacity of being at the will of the people by giving power to the people. And when we develop our self-government, it's not no HNIC type thing. It's just the people make these decisions and govern. You know, we got to get away from that authoritative things that can be corrupted. And, you know, they say power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so we're going to stay away from that by having our original culture of councils and stuff like we used to have back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need some councils of elders in every city that we're talking about putting something like this together, because there's what I refer to as the microwave generation. Like, there's been a huge gap. There was already a natural generation, you know, the time period when we were born, but I mean, it's huge now, you know, and it can be healed. It can be rebridged, but it's going to take a lot of work.
Yeah, we are the starter of that. So, you know, it looks like a lot of work, but really things fall into place naturally, you know. They'll fall into place very easily and naturally. I don't know how long your show lasts, but I know we got a conference call. Things are so busy here. But, we're going on a conference call now, but I just wanted to thank you all for having me on the show. We definitely have to talk and engage more now.
Yes, we appreciate you too, brother. And just, you know, follow up with me. You're welcome back here on Sign of the Times anytime you get ready. We air Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 8 usually. But we'll go ahead and let you get to your conference call. We appreciate your time tonight. And most of all, I appreciate you coming back from Zimbabwe. I feel special. I feel like you came all the way back here just so you could help little old me.
I did.
I need help. I need help, bad. So I appreciate
at your
you, brother.
Service, queen. We're going to talk even later on this evening. I'll reach out to you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Be blessed.
You too. We're going to go ahead and close it out tonight with Guilty of Being a Man, which, you know, this brother tells a story of how he had to survive, and the very things that Brother Ramzu spoke about in the beginning of the broadcast, he had to do. So he's just merely guilty of being a man. This is Queen Tahira signing off for the weekend, everybody. We love you. We thank you. And most of all, we appreciate and respect you. If you need me, give me a call. You have the number. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Niggas be in the crack of courtrooms, don't be understand what the fuck they do. I understand everything the motherfuckers be saying. They be coming in that bitch like, you're wrong, my lawyer. As you see, my client comes from a broken home, being solely raised by a grandmother who works two jobs, even on the weekends. If we systematically allow the courts to adjudicate this young man, we won't be a part of the solution. In fact, we'll play a major role in the forever going problems that increasingly plagues urban America. And then the state say, objection, your honor. To let this menace back into our society would be a great mistake. Let the records reflect that Mr. Thompson scores out to life without any possible chance of parole. Therefore, it's imperative that the court focus on the defendant's criminal history instead of its ethical background. And then the judge say, Mr. Thompson, you got anything to say? Yep, growing up without a father in my motherfucking household, I had to be a man a long time ago, introduced to the game at a young age. while my peers all hung out at the arcade. The reason why I never talked about my problems, because you had your own and still haven't solved them. You labeled me as a kid who couldn't cope with life, but you could never understand unless you're poor and black. First day of school was like the last day. While you was playing volleyball, I was searching for that fast pace. My granny's holding down a job or two. We had to make ends meet, so I got mine off the avenue. Cash flows through the inner city streets, and I thank the Lord for giving me survival instincts. Many of night, I came across somebody's child, leaving this world, gangland style. And all the while, my mind was taking mental notes. Another Negro, ghetto hero, murder she wrote. Could have been me 6 feet deep, but I'm still around on ghetto ground. Shit go down pound for pound. I'm slinging bricks at the chain gang, and I'ma sling the motherfuckers harder until some things change. So if my past reflects on my destination, then you know I'm in a fucked up situation. And if I'm wrong from getting it the best I can, Your Honor, I'm guilty of being a man. And did the judge go to saying some shit like this here? Before I release the jury of your peers for deliberation, Mr. Thompson, I would like for you to elaborate on your upbringing. What caused such a young man of your caliber to commit such heinous crimes since the age of 9? Well, 7 kids and 7 different fucking daddies. I used to wish my mammy would have never had me. As I recall, the AFDC we received wasn't enough, and all of us had to eat. I showed no love for whoever tried to knock the hustle, and feel the same if you never really had the struggle. You motherfuckers always place the blame on my kind. When we retaliate, y'all quick to say we've lost our minds and give us time. When time is all we got, maybe I need 3 free hots in that goddamn clock. Cause if I die in the street or in the pen, leaving my kin with no cheese will be my only sin. I pray to God that you crack us finally understand I'm only guilty of being a motherfucking man. And then the jury come in that bitch and they be like, the jury has reached its verdict. Count 1, trafficking cocaine, we find an defendant guilty. Count 2, battered on a law enforcement officer, we find the defendant guilty. Count 3, resisting arrest with violence, we also find the defendant guilty. But due to the insinuating circumstances that surround the case, Your Honor, we, the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, are only forced to find the defendant guilty simply of being a man due to the unusual circumstances. Recess, mistrial.